Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WWE Podcast here with the WrestleMagic episode with myself, Rocky T, and my partner, the gardener, Michael Gross.
What's shaking, bacon? How you doing, brother?
You know what? I thought I was going to have a more elaborate intro, but I was like, let me just do this real quick. I was very excited to get back on. I can't remember the last time it was just me and you. It's always a combination of me, you, somebody else, or one of us missing. So I'm just excited to get going. You know, we really didn't have a plan for today. We just kind of called me and be like, you want to record tonight? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. We were free and just trying to come up with what we could talk about. It was maybe different of what everybody else is talking about, but we're pretty much going to give our two cents of, you know, some other releases and maybe some returns and a couple other things that we have in our minds, and just going to kind of shoot from the hip and see where it takes us. We were expecting to have some of our WrestleMagic counterparts and Scully and Maverick joined, but them boys across the pond could not stay up late enough with us. So it's just going to be the captain and Rocky T here with you guys tonight.
You know, honestly, it's been a long time since it's been just you and I. And I mean, we all have life, and people don't understand. Like, I'm in my later 40s. You're no young man yourself. I'm not going to give away your age out of respect. But I do see the fact that, like, we do get really, really busy, and it's great to have a great team. But everybody, I mean, Mav, you know, he's in the military. You know, Mark, who comes in and out of WrestleMagic, he's dealing with his own things. He's very faithful to the NXT report. Brian Michael Patrick, Chef Patrick, he's a chef. He's a little busy. I mean, everybody's had like a very, very hard winter to spring. So we didn't have as much time as we like to. But today, I think that us segueing into a little bit of what's happening now, even though that's not really our cup of tea, is kind of important because it's an annual thing, and that's releases.
That's right. WWE's tradition of post-WrestleMania releases has carried over into the TKO Group Holdings era with Sangha, Veer, Jinder Mahal, Xia Li, Von Wagner, and Zion Quinn. Did I say that right?
I think so. Zion.
Zion, yeah, like something like that. These have been released. These were, you know, Jinder, former champion. The rest of them were NXT call-ups. That's where they're, you know, they're homegrowns. They were called up in the last draft last year, but the thing about this group of people was that they did have a lot of potential, but they were never really given anything of substance, any traction, anything to do. So it's like wasted talent. I really don't know much more to say. That was probably because that's when Vince was still in charge, and by the time Triple H was fully in control and the creative at the time, he just honestly did not have anything for them. And I know that this group of wrestlers had been with the company for 5 or more years. So I think that was one of the, that was one of the stipulations of who was going to get released. Somebody who had some tenure there at the company.
Yeah, it's strange how they have this 5-year rule, which, I mean, there's certain people I would have canned a long time ago because their time. I think the Awesome Truth should have had their walking papers 10 years ago, to be honest with you. And I know everybody's a really big fan of R-Truth. He is
The Miz.
R-Truth. He is like a locker room leader kind of guy. He does have a lot of potential. He has incredible athleticism. He's older than me. He's like in his early 50s. I get it. His character, forget it. While it's kind of tongue in cheek, it adds nothing to the value of the product, let alone for he in a talent vacuum that destroys ratings like The Miz to be tagged up and winning over like talented people is just a crime. Those guys should have got their walking papers. But let's talk about the people who did get their walking papers. First of all, this message goes out to a good friend, a man who loves the show, a man we all love, DJ Kuzma. We're sorry. Because there is no longer the Veer Mahan report. So I had to say it in the most sullen way. But the fact is, he's gone. Sangha's gone. Jinder Mahal, he never should have been hired back to begin with. The guy really didn't, let alone given a world title push. I get the fact that you're going into India, but there's people that have like talent and people that you actually want to pay to see. that you couldn't have ruined airtime and viewership and just dumbing down and killing the product by putting a world title, something that Cody has fought so long for. Jinder Mahal already had. I want that to sink into people.
Well, I think I do understand where you're coming from, but I think it was worth it for the partnership that WWE now has with the Prince of India, with that country, where we can hold our crown jewel events, and the revenue that's coming in from just alone from you know that country is enough to catapult what is now the Triple H era into the future. And it's going to be, I mean, I think it's going to be a cornerstone, because now Crown Jewel is positioned as even maybe even more of a top tier PLE than a Survivor Series or even a SummerSlam, just because of the size of the stadium that they put it in and the amount of people that show up. And now they have Wrestle World or Mania, whatever what it's called, experience. I mean, they have so much rooted over there now. I mean, it's hard to get away from it.
I think it's a disgusting thing to have a blood money contract with a blood money company. Country, excuse me. I think it's a disgusting thing to work with them. So, I'm not Mr. Yo Patriot, everything else, but let's look at it and see what it is. We're working with a disgusting place for disgusting amounts of money. A place that, when we first signed the contract to bring over an idiot like Jinder, wanted us to bring over Yokozuna. That's some great people to work with. So, let's get back into these releases. The one that shocked me the most was Von Wagner, because they had so much hype, praise. He was put on the same tier as Bron Breakker as far as the next level and the next generation of performer. He wasn't bad. He still needed polishing. He definitely needed a little – he needed a good coach, somebody like an Arn Anderson or somebody like a Mike Rotundo or somebody like that, an old schooler to really get behind him and say, okay, this is what we got to do. This is how we tell a story in a match. But he was the son of, or he is, I don't want to say was, he hasn't passed, son of Wayne Bloom of,
you know, oh, interesting.
He's the son of Wayne Bloom, who was a former AWA World Tag Team Champion. When Wayne Bloom came to the WWF, in the old days, he was part of the Beverly Brothers, because they have to change everybody and own their names. But the fact is, first of all, the name is stupid. Von Wagner. What is that? But that's not really what's going to stop you from getting over. It was just the fact that they didn't use him. They called him up, and they didn't use him. They used him mostly on Main Event and like so many B shows, and then took him off the house show circuit. Well, of course he's going to get released, but that's – a whole thing with creative not knowing what to do for somebody. That's really, really sad. In the cases of the other releases, Indashir was a stop start. I think the whole thing is people realize that Jinder was kind of a talent vacuum and sucks the life out of a room. And Veer and Sangha are so green, and they can't get anything done as far as having a really good match. And it's like, okay, it's been too long. At this point, you guys got to go. You're big, you're ominous, but what are you really doing?
I don't know. I don't think they were really ever tested. They were never given lengthy matches to show off if they could perform or put on a tag team classic match. I just don't think they were ever given enough time. And I don't know if that was, you know, still due because the fingertips of Vince, or I mean, you got a three-hour show of Raw. You can't give these guys 10, 12 minutes at least once every other week to showcase themselves. It just they were never given the time. So that's just what it boils down to for me.
I can see that counterpoint debate, but I think maybe that was because they're too green. And maybe they're like, okay, these guys just cannot do TV. Maybe there's a good point that they might have known something that we didn't know. So they might have seen like too many house show matches or too many like main event matches and said, okay, these guys are really just not producing. They're too clumsy, they're missing spots, they're just not doing it. So I kind of see it in that aspect because none of their matches really wowed me. It was a lot of squash matches really fast. But if you can't move past that, you know, 30 second to a minute and a half match, yeah, there's a point where you got to say, okay, you guys got to go. So I'm not saying that there wasn't potential. I'm just saying that in that case, I could see they're just – they said, okay, 5 years and you still can't do something great. All right, we you know, better luck. Come visit us in the future.
Well, speaking of another NXT called up that never really did anything but be a jobber, what are your thoughts on Cameron Grimes being released?
That one surprised me because he just worked with Bron Breakker. And he is incredibly talented, and he'll go back to his old name when he worked in TNA or Impact, whatever you want to call it. He's a guy, it wouldn't surprise me, that turns up in AEW. It's another one of those deals where I just don't think that creative knew how to use him, because he is actually talented and he can have a match, but I think it's partly size and partly they just didn't know what to do with him. And it becomes one of these, we don't know what to do, so we'll just thank you very much, have a nice day. And that's kind of sad because he has a lot of potential. I'm going to give you some names that I'm shocked they didn't release.
Okay, shoot.
Big E. Okay. Because he spent 2 years rehabbing, and if he gets back in a ring and he is incredibly limited, does anybody want to see those matches? And I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just telling you straight up, that's really sad because his matches are going to be really, really bad. Dexter Lumis. I'm a big fan of what he can do if you let him do something. But when's the last time he did anything? The Miz, because he sucks so bad, it's unreal. If you're listening to this, please go away.
Real quick. Would somebody who sucks so much, The Miz, would he be the only wrestler to have held all of the last six tag team championship designs? He's the first two-time Grand Slam champion, and now he achieves this new record. He held the tag titles from the Ruthless Aggression era with Big Show. He had double champ there. He held the bronze tag team titles with when he was with Mizdow. He had the SmackDown tag team titles with John Morrison, the Raw titles with Miz, and now he has with the new iteration of the World Tag Team Champions. He's the only man to have held all six versions of these tag titles over now, what, the last 22 years.
Good for him.
But yeah, but he sucks.
He does suck. He sucks really bad. I go with the Tito Santana rule. If Tito Santana could perform in the ring way better than you could, which they could, he has the most sloppy finisher and performs it in the most sloppy way. He looks like Play-Doh. He is terrible. Logan Paul is the person they wanted when they signed The Miz for all these years, period. Do you want a reality person to come in? I don't believe The Miz could fight his way out of half that roster. I don't believe he could beat anybody in a fist fight on that roster. I don't believe he could beat up Dominic Mysterio.
Ooh, that's a low blow.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
It may it's be, like, but...
So, there's no believability in his credibility. He loaned credence that anybody could do this, but really anybody can't. He was just given it. He was given. Did he earn stuff by working on the road and everything else? Yeah. But was he pushed way before people who are way more talented? Let me ask you this. Shinsuke Nakamura has not won all those accolades. But if you put those two in a shoot fight, Shinsuke, who wrestled Brock in IWGP New Japan and knocked out one of Brock Lesnar's teeth. Who would hold all those accolades? A guy with the worst catchphrase of all time, one of the worst finishers of all time, and a sloppy in-ring. But he was on a reality show. and he cuts the best scripted promos. I'm going to give that one to Shinsuke. So that's what I have to say. I would have future endeavored that guy before I would have hired him.
Oh man!
I hope he listens to the show so he can like retort to me. It's at 144 Captain on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, yeah.
And Rocky's T007. If you want to hang out, Miz. Okay.
Hey, I'm from Cleveland. He's from Cleveland. I would have canned him way before Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler had to wash off the stench of being part of the Spirit Squad in the early 2000s to become one of the greatest in-ring bumpers and one of the greatest in-ring performers and could perform. Miz, that's key. You can actually wrestle. You don't just cut your scripted promos because you're an actor. So, I digress. And then R-Truth really doesn't add anything. He's a comedic part, and I get, oh, he's old and he's still athletic. What does he really add? 2 years of chasing a 24/7 championship. No, there's nothing you've done for me. Now, if you're a backstage coach, stay backstage and be a coach because I heard you're good at that. There's a time and a place for everything. Your place is an on-screen. You shouldn't be going over real talent.
He's got the most universal, most beloved catchphrase of all time.
That he's an idiot?
Whatever the case may be, if that's what it takes.
So, let's look at some of the people on these rosters. You know,
yeah.
I was surprised they didn't cut Dexter Lumis because they really don't know what to do with him. Honestly, I was surprised that they didn't cut Karrion Kross again. And I love Kross, but he's killer Kross. As Karrion Kross, he's a watered down version of who he was. He worked. If people go look at his debut and his matches and everything he did in TNA/Impact. Or MLW, Major League Wrestling. And you're going to be like, how did they miss the boat on this guy? Because they don't know what to do. Because they've changed and altered his character while trying to keep it the same way. It's like taking Andre the Giant. And instead of him going against your biggest big man in every territory that he went to, you have him wrestle the smallest guy and ask why the smallest guy can't slam him. And people are going to look at you and say, this is stupid. That's what they've done with Karrion Kross. They've altered him too much as far as the nature of who he is and what he can be. They're not letting him reach his full potential. Now, hopefully in the Triple H regime, we'll see within the next 6 months if he survives the next round of cuts. But it's pathetic to me that they don't see what they had, see what he did in other places. All you have to do is copy and paste and then turn it up a few notches, and you'd have a main eventer.
I do not disagree with you, but speaking of what WWE does have or what they're planning to keep, I want to get your thoughts on some coming up contracts that are going to be expiring and then a couple of people that have already resigned. So okay, per Fightful.com, WWE in May, Fightful reported that Natalya's contract is coming up. They should get re-signed?
50-50. What do you think?
I think because of the work now. I mean, she's always done work in NXT, but now I feel like she's everywhere. It doesn't matter what brand she's on. And I feel that she doesn't get cut until they induct her. Because, I mean, I guess they could cut her and then bring her back in a year or so when they're ready to induct her in the Hall of Fame. But I think they do it while she's still in tenure. So
I'm going to roll with that one, too. That's a good call.
All right. Also in May, Drew McIntyre's contract is set to come up in about 6 weeks or so. Definitely. They're going to resign him.
Yeah, they have too much of a good storyline with Punk going on, and he's already tested his waters outside for, what was he gone, like 5 or 6 years? Left a little boy, came back a man.
Yep.
There's too much money on him. There's at least one more title reign, and there's too much that you can do with him. He has grown so much in so many years. He's a company guy. They're not getting rid of him.
Yeah. Speaking of a company couple, Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins contracts are set to expire in June of this year. No, is there like barely a no doubt they get resigned?
They're going nowhere. They're going nowhere. What they'll do is they'll try to tease it and take like a few months off, but they're resigning if they haven't already. They're just negotiating.
Well, I thought they were taking it a few months off, but apparently with the Rhea injury, we got a new champion in Becky, and she'll be carrying it, and we're going to see where that goes. But we'll touch base on that, you know, towards the end here. So this year in 2024, in the summer, the only contract that's coming up is for Ricochet.
I think he resigns. He definitely resigns. The word is that TKO is going to actually start helping pay the wrestlers a bit more than they were making before, which they're already being really, really handsomely paid. So the big thing now at this point is to keep AEW's claws off them so they don't get signed for an even more ridiculous amount to not be used and have their good name sullied, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So Ricochet stays put. He's had classics with Will Ospreay, but I think that he sees the silver lining in the fact that WWE takes him more serious. There is a chance someday Ricochet could be a world champion. There's a chance. Whereas Will Ospreay could be an AEW champion. Well, what will that really mean? Now, I also want to say congratulations to Shane Swerve Strickland. I've been following him for probably eight years, and WWE didn't know what to do with him. And, he's holding the second most prestigious title in wrestling right now. So to him, I say congratulations. I always knew he had it in him. I don't think I would have taken the belt off Joe so soon unless Joe needs some time off. But the fact that Joe, that's another one. We don't know what to do with Samoa Joe. Are you that dumb? Yes, you are. But the person who was in charge of that and released all these people, that person's gone now. So, there was also a re-signing of Finn Balor.
That's right. Finn Balor tweeted out, multi-year, he's going to be back, along with another multi-year superstar extending. It's going to be Randy Orton.
Jeez.
Through 2024, we'll at least have Kevin Owens through the end of the year. I believe his contract comes up at the beginning of 2025. In December of 2024, TKO will decide if they're going to re-sign any or all members of The New Day, Kofi Kingston, Big E, and Xavier Woods. They're on contract to the end of the year of 2024. LA Knights is set to come up in January of 2025.
He's too hot to let go.
And then, okay, so this next name on the list may be the one where that actually happens. Through 2025, so maybe a little bit longer, but through 2025, The Miz. So that sounds like towards the end of 2025.
Retire that turd.
Also sticking with us through 2025 will be Dragon Lee. And apparently, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and Rey Mysterio have contracts until late 2027, while Dominic Mysterio has a contract until late 2028. Booker T's run as an announcer, it goes through 2029. And I guess Undertaker's on a legend deal that has him signed on a 15-year deal that he signed back in 2019, taking him until 2034.
Well, I see Mysterio going on to a legends deal after his runs out. His body isn't what it used to. The guy's as old as I am. He's not going to be doing planchas and hurricanranas in his 50s. The guy needs a break. He's done what he has to do. And he is best suited to become the head of talent scouting. I would put him and Undertaker together to be talent scouts. You have a big man scout and a small man scout.
Brilliant.
I would actually have them work together. I would have them going to shows together so they can compare notes and say, okay, how can we work a match with this guy? What do you think? Because that's the two best minds that you could put together. As far as signing talent.
You make it right at a TV show about it.
I wouldn't air it for a couple of years after some of these people have been signed. Just so we're dialing back, pulling the curtain back a little bit
right.
more.
Right.
You know, when Tough Enough first came out, Triple H said he hated it because it exposed the business. And mm-hmm. a lot of that also is because of the curtain call, and he got punished so hard.
Right.
So I agree with the fact that while kayfabe is supposedly dead, some of these shows some of these shows are really, really entertaining. But give us a couple years first. I don't want to see, we just signed so-and-so, and this is how we did it. Let me see 3 years after we signed them, when they're just getting ready to leave NXT, why you did it, what was the psychology behind it. To me, that's better to TV, that's better entertaining, that it's just better.
I hear you. I hear you. So, moving on to a couple of contracts that are on the other side of the spectrum in AEW, to pop out of the screen to me that I need your opinion on.
Sure, hit me.
Because, so, coming up for All Elite Wrestling, two contracts are expiring in September of 2024, as reported by Fightful.com, and that is Brian Danielson and Dustin Rhodes.
Brian Danielson will never leave.
Okay.
He's intertwined with the backstage. He's becoming basically their version of Triple H. And as far as Dustin Rhodes, it's 50-50. That's a very tough call, because I'm sure AEW will offer him ridiculous money to help try to run things backstage, but the fact is no one can run anything back there. I mean, you've been on the line with me with Justin Credible when he's talking to Jerry Lynn, one of his best friends, who's a producer, and Jerry says these kids don't want to listen to anything. So it's one of those things where if he's just fed up with the childishness of everything, I could see him becoming a backstage producer for WWE. But I think Tony Khan's going to try to also counter, like double the money because of Cody, double the money to keep him as a producer. Now, honestly, if I was Tony Khan, what I would do is have Scott Norton and Mark Henry and The Big Show. Scott Norton doesn't work there, but I'd hire him. And I would go to New Japan and hire Haku / Meng. And I would give them about 12 cases of beer every show. And I would say, okay, guys, what I say goes. If anybody wants to change it, you take care of it. Even as old as they are, I think you'd start getting some better booking right there.
That could be one hell of a team there. But
it's a backstage thing. Honestly, Dustin Rhodes has a great mind. And with his dad being Dusty, if they could let Dustin actually take over some of the booking duties, which I think he is more than capable of, and I think Tony Khan might throw that in his direction and throw more of that in Brian Danielson's direction, then if you can actually enforce it and stop letting all these idiots go rogue, AEW might have a chance and start giving you a more viable product. Now, one more contract I wanted to talk about is Finn Balor's and why Finn Balor's is so important. Finn Balor's contract to WWE is very important because you wouldn't have AEW if you didn't have the Bullet Club. The Bullet Club then had their subsect, the Elite, which that's how they got the name, but they all had to be part of the Bullet Club first. The Bullet Club was the brainchild and the idea of one Prince Devitt, but everybody else knows him as
Finn Balor.
So you have a top-tier guy and the first Universal WWE champion walking through your door, and a guy who wants to do more serious wrestling. But he's also going to be surrounded by some of his friends. You have so many storylines that you could write. Don't tell me that they weren't salivating and rubbing their hands together thinking, wow, if we got the old Prince back. We've got Adam Cole. We've got Kenny Omega if he's ever healthy again. We've got the Bucks. We've got this. We got that. So many different avenues. So many different avenues that you can drive that big old Cadillac down. So that's why he was offered ridiculous money. But that means he's also probably going to finally get his individual push. So
Hopefully. But
yeah.
Out of the first two, Danielson and Rhodes, do either one of them they have to come back to be inducted in the fame, right? As Daniel Bryan and as Goldust. See that happening?
I can see that happening, but they should do it under their real names at this point. It's kind of silly to change their names. You know, TNA worked with WWE a long time ago to induct people who were, you know, in TNA, like contracted, like Ric Flair was contracted TNA and stuff like that. So I could see them saying, okay, it's Bryan Danielson. Or, you know, they say it's Daniel Bryan. He'll break character and be like, I'm Bryan Danielson. You know, like this year, they grew a little bit of courage by saying, okay, it's the U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda. Well, I remember Mike Rotunda as a kid wrestling both in NWA and WWF, and then all of a sudden he comes back and they call him IRS. This guy's a former World Tag Team Champion. You're changing his name and changing his identity. It's like when Iron Sheik became Colonel Mustafa for a while. Some things you just don't do. So when you're going to the Hall of Fame, they might try to say it like that, but it's going to be like, okay, we'll just call each other whatever. Another case in point with that was when Lita went into the Hall of Fame, Kane was still active, but she was referring to him as Glenn. You know, his real name, Glenn Jacobs. She said, I couldn't do this without Glenn and stuff like that. So yeah, I could see Bryan Danielson going in as Bryan Danielson or Daniel Bryan, but acknowledging his real name. And same thing with Dustin Rhodes. They're not going to put him in. They might say Gold Dust, but he'll be like, I'm Dustin Rhodes. You know, you can't deny who I am. My brother's here. You know my name. I wrestled here before under my real name. So, yeah, they'll go in, but they might do it contractually obligated to a different company.
Well, that'll be the day. That'll be interesting. Anything can happen, especially in WWE. Everybody comes back. Everybody's got to be inducted. Just have to come back. I don't think anybody really ever stays away, except for the ones that are, or the few that are blacklisted for life. And we know who they or he is. So,
yeah.
But so the only other list of a contract that's coming up through the end of 2025 that at least I can see on this list of contracts that are coming up is another inductee, and that's Chris Jericho. So eventually he has come back for a Legends contract. He has no business in the ring. Come back, do some promos, sell some merch, collect a check, be inducted, grab your ring, and be on your way.
Yeah, I can see that. And, I think he's – Once he gets out of the train wreck that AEW has become, that he really thought was going to be so much better than it is, I'm not really trying to bag on them. It's just the fact that it seems to be, you know, the old adage of, you know, put somebody who has ADD in a circular room and tell them to pee in the corner. Like, that's what AEW has become. It's just... They can't figure it out, and it's all Tony Khan's fault. But yes, Jericho definitely will come back, get his ring, and it wouldn't surprise me if he signed on to be a backstage consultant and a coach, and you know, just try to, you know, elongate the career that has made him famous. So yeah, I could see that happening. So you know, career wise. And contract-wise, it's going to be a very interesting off-season, as I like to call it. But is there anybody that you're surprised has not been canned or future endeavored?
Let's see. Well, basically all of Alpha Academy except for Chad Gable. I know they're a nice little comedy feel-good act, but and they're jobbers, and you got the little, you know, dancing with, you know, just it's not as over as it was. It's fun. It's a fun spot, but if we're trying to move into the future again, where it's going to be full, like all wrestling and part entertainment, not just all entertainment and with a little bit of wrestling, with wrestling dominating. Did you see the promo that Chad did on Friday when he was dismissing the Alpha Academy?
Oh, yeah.
Him in his play? Oh, my God. I cannot believe, like, we are definitely in PG-14 era, and this, I love it so much. But honestly, that was probably the group that I thought was actually all of them except for Chad was going to be canned, and we still have more to come, so it's actually not too late. But maybe for them, since he's gonna, it seems like he's gonna, they're gonna follow him, and they're gonna go ahead and take his orders, then I don't think they're gonna be given their writing papers just yet. But
I still think Otis looks like Francis from Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
I guess I can see that.
You can't unsee it once you see it. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, keep going with the people that you're surprised we're not let go.
Well, it's not too late, but I figured we already kind of hit the wall, hit the ceiling with the LWO stuff with, you know, Santos Escobar and his group. So I figured maybe part of LWO would have been let go. I figured Carlito pretty much came and did what he needed to do, got over in Puerto Rico last year, you know, been Ray's sidekick. I've kind of figured they already done all they can do with him. So I'm surprised that he's not on that list yet. He may be. Same thing with Joaquin Phoenix and what's the other one? His little tag partner. I can't remember his name, but those guys there. Selena's kind of been just not really significant. Even when she was queen of the ring, she didn't do anything significant with that. I figure she's been floundering for years. She's been, again, she was given a title match because they were in Puerto Rico last year with the pay-per-view. So,
to her defense, she's the most talented person that they're most talented female that they never push. And
yeah, you do hear that a lot, and it's true.
And the fact that she's a bargaining chip to get her husband back.
Who's her husband?
Aleister Black.
That's her husband?
Yes.
No way.
That's one lucky son of a gun.
Wow.
Yes. Just like I also believe that, I mean, we all love Rhea. But mm-hmm. The fact that they broke the fourth wall by showing her, like at the live event, the last one that you were on the show with Matt about, when they showed her in the audience with Buddy Murphy, Buddy Matthews, whatever you want to call him. And of course that idiot Pat McAfee, I'd fire that idiot really fast. Cause he acts like such a 14-year-old. They show he and her together, and he just starts saying, "Who's that with her? Who is that?" Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a lot more foreshadowing going on, which I like, because you get to speculate on things that could actually happen. It's not just things we see one time and then it's never followed up on. So yeah. definitely see that. But I think Aleister Black is, I think he's on this list real quick. Hold on. He re-signed in 2022 for 5 years, so he's there until 2027. AEW, Buddy Matthews is not on this list. Let me check it again real quick.
But also remember, Andrade was signed for a while, but he got out. So, and a lot of those guys came up together with each other in NXT and wrestled each other on an international scope and an international scene. That's why Hunter first signed them for NXT. So what I'm seeing is where there's a will, there's a way. All you have to do is fight someone backstage.
Right. Get let go and make Tony Khan fear for his life.
When he's like 50 feet away and not even touched.
So Backlash is coming up in 2 weeks, right?
I believe 2 weeks. Something like that, yeah.
So our main event at this one is going to be Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. Get very excited for this one. It's going to be a very good technical, but partially high-flying match. I don't think it's going to be too overdone. I think it's going to be done just right. But speaking of Backlash, on this day in history of, well, actually, would be tomorrow, April 25th, this day in history in 1999, at the very first WWF Backlash pay-per-view from Providence, Rhode Island, Stone Cold Steve Austin retained the WWF Championship against The Rock in a WrestleMania rematch. At the conclusion of the match, Austin reunited with his coveted Smoking Skull belt by Vince McMahon. So on this day in history, that's what took place at the very first Backlash. And in 2 weeks, we make history at Backlash France with Cody and AJ as the main event. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's going to be a fun show, to be honest with you. AJ versus Cody, I think it'll be for the first time, as far as I know.
Right, it is. They actually mentioned it, yeah.
I think that this is going to be a match where AJ is going to use his knees from about 4 or 5 years ago. We're going to see a couple of moves from AJ we haven't seen in years ago. I think Cody's going to pull out all the stops that he was using in his epic matches against Nick Aldis, people, from about 5 years ago. If people have never seen Nick Aldis versus Cody, the two series NWA title switch, that was Cody's best matches ever. They were. There was a story and there was a match and it was amazing. So with that being said, if we see the Cody, that was Cody versus Aldis, and we see the AJ from 5, 6 years ago, just a little bit healthier, a little bit more spring in the step, we're going to see something really awesome. We're going to see, and I don't want to hear this is awesome. I want to hear, wow, you know, I don't want to hear the holy S chants. I don't want to hear the you still have it. I don't want that overplayed stuff. I just want people to just applaud and scream. Because I think we're going to get a good story. And that's the thing. Both of them are so old school. They're going to tell a story.
Right. Well, that's something to look forward to. What else is some things to look forward to is us more in the future. So, listeners, we're going to go ahead and say goodnight right now. But we are going to do our very best to continue to try to push out these episodes so y'all can have additional things to listen to throughout the mat. We know that Matt and Michael Ritter and Memphis Mark and everybody's holding it down, you know, all week, every week for y'all with the Raw, SmackDown, NXT reviews and Anthony DeMarco with the After Dark. And, you know, we like to throw in our 2 cents from time to time. You know, me and the Gardener are very, very, very busy, very, very busy, sexy men out here in the world. And it's hard to just to find the time for us to sit down together. So luckily I got my woman in check and all the women are in check. So, you know, that's the way to be.
I want to end this episode with a song.
Okay, what you got for us?
It's a song by a band called Prick. It's called I Apologize. I've recommended this. Yeah, no. This is industrial. Huh? This is industrial. Okay. This man was one of Trent Reznor's best friends. He's a Clevelander from way back when. I've suggested the song maybe once before, but it goes out to a certain special somebody who's accepted my apologies. And so I want to end with the song I Apologize. And I also want to end this with another song. It's a song called King for a Day, and it's by Faith No More. So you have two songs. That's your homework. And also, I want to shout out DJ Kuzmo because I know we're not going to have a Veer Mahan report anymore. So we want to console you and do a show with you. We could talk.
We still have the music show for him.
We do. We have a great show lined up that we've been waiting for you, but you were waiting on Veer Mahan and. He let you down, but we won't.
Like the format's there, it's ready. I'll have to add some stuff to it, but it's been ready.
What about you? Do you have a song that you'd like to give people?
Let me see. What song? You know what? I haven't really been listening to music much. You know what I've been falling in the rabbit holes of?
What's that?
Karen's Getting Arrested by Cops on YouTube. Oh, entitled. So I started watching. This guy, he's a First Amendment auditor. He goes from city to city, testing the limits of the Constitution and police stations and, you know, around City Hall and things like that. And then I just kind of watched all his stuff and then fell into cops getting arrested by cops, which turned into the craziest cop traffic stops, which turned into entitled Karens getting arrested by cops. It's very entertaining. It's what I like to do now towards the end of bed or actually at work. I've had some downtime during my lunchtime just to get my mind off of everything else, because my mind is, you know, the family, my mom, Kimmy, the boys, and then wrestling and school. And it's like, I need something to turn the brain off. So that's what it is. So if you need a good, you know, laugh, and you'll make me, it always makes me feel better about myself knowing that there's crazy people out there, because there's also men that are considered Karens too. So it's just, it's very entertaining for me. But
no, Chads. They're
is
Chad.
That, is that what they call them, Chads?
Yeah, Chads. Chad and Karen, because a Chad is usually a guy in like a pastel polo, comes in, tries to order everything, to like being a guy who works in the restaurant nightclub industry, tries to order everything in front of his friends, cheaps really, or tips really cheap, and is just like the biggest jackass in the world and treats you really bad. That's a Chad. And then we'll just laugh. Like anybody in the industry will be like, have you met Chad and his friend Chad and Chad? And don't forget Big Chad and Little Chad. And we've got Chad in the corner who's already drunk, you know. No, that's really good. Now, also, as far as Wrestle Magic goes, we're not dead. Guys, we just – a lot of life has taken precedent. Now, as you know, Maverick is working on an episode that's almost polished with my brother. And it's on the Dynamite Kid, which is going to be a lot of fun. And so that's going to be under the WrestleMagic banner. And then we also have some more things going out as far as the territories with Memphis Mark. Michael Patrick and I have been talking about doing a spotlight on a hidden gem in wrestling, which is Little People.
Ooh.
So, yes, that's something that nobody covers, and that's going to be a timeless classic. And I know that Michael Patrick is really putting a lot of work into it. I believe we're going to contact the Micro Wrestling Federation, which actually exists.
Yes, they have them here in Houston. Actually, me and my coworkers were planning to go to a show soon.
And I was also thinking, if you were up at Rock, maybe you and I do something we've never done, just for the sake of Wrestle Magic. How about in the future, you and I cover a TNA pay-per-view?
Ooh. What was the first one I ever bought? It might have been Bound for Glory 2007. But yes, I love that idea.
And this is what we do. We go in blind. Just to see, like, we go in blind. Like, we don't know anything. We can maybe... I have a sling package which has access, so I can see a little bit of TNA. You don't have that benefit. So, and you don't really necessarily need that benefit. So I say we do something blind. We're like, okay, let's see what's happening here. We both watch the pay-per-view, and then we say, okay, this is where TNA is going, because a lot of people say it's a hot place to be. And now that, what's his name, Mustafa Ali's there, Dolph Ziggler's there, but there's a lot of WWE, like, Heath Slater's there, and some people there's some people I never would have signed. It's just, I think going in blind on a pay-per-view and saying, okay, this is what the wrestling was, this is what the storyline was purported, this is how we felt about the match, and not being a complete downer on it. I just think if you were somebody seeing it for the first time, let's see how TNA is doing now in a new day and age. What do you think?
I love it. I love it.
So, all right, folks, we're going to put a lot of work into a lot of stuff, and you're going to get a lot more Wrestle Magic coming up. A lot of irons in the fire. We have lives, guys. We're just like you. You know, and as much as you love the content that we put out, we also love to provide for our families. We also love to be there for our girlfriends. We also love to make sure that children go to school and have food on the table and do whatever they need to do in life. And that's what we need to do, and we need to keep doing for our families. And Matt is a saint for the way he sacrifices his life for this. And the point of Wrestle Magic was to help him and buffer him. We got caught up in our own stuff, but we're back.
Hey, we have done our part, and we are just going over our year milestone anyway. So
yes, we are.
And we're doing what we said we were going to do. You know, an episode a month. We did two, three, you know, a couple months here and there. But that's the point, is to fill those extra gaps during the month and talk outside the box.
Well, true. And a lot of people don't get our After Dark stuff that we did with Justin because he can't stop swearing. But, yeah, just look forward towards the future, folks, because we're here for you as much as you're here to listen, okay?
Alrighty. I'm going to call it a night, and we are out, and we'll talk to everybody on the next one.
All right, bye.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.